We are back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, and for the next part of the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Higgs, Director of the Biosecurity Research Institute, which is also known as the BRI here at Kansas State University. Good morning, Dr. Higgs.
Good morning, Brandon. Welcome. Wonderful to be back. Just extraordinary that I'm actually here in the studio again.
Now, we've bumped into each other a couple times, I think, outside of the station. I actually saw you at the grocery store, I think, last week.
That's right. I suddenly recognized the face and put it with the voice.
Well, it was good to see you. I think I was getting some stuff for breakfast that morning. And as I traditionally do on the weekends, I usually make breakfast on Saturday or Sunday, if not both days. And my daughters absolutely love to make requests on the weekend, so I try to oblige them here.
You're a good father.
Well, it's certainly good to see you. We were talking, obviously, about apple pies here in the last segment. I might just ask you, are you a big partaker of apple pies?
I don't really have a big sweet tooth, but if I'm going to go for a pie, it's always an apple. And the ice cream that you were talking about earlier has definitely got me all over it. Yeah.
Most people would say vanilla ice cream. I don't know that you'd... There's another route you'd really want to go with apple pie.
I only like vanilla ice cream, believe it or not.
Really?
Yep, my absolute favorite.
It is good stuff. Well, it's certainly good to see you again in person. I know we haven't been in person here for quite a while. We've done a lot of Zoom interviews over the last 18 months. I've had you on a couple times, and we see what's going on here in our world, and I know there's still a lot of questions. I might ask first, with the BRI facility specifically, are you guys back all pretty much in person at this point?
To be honest, Brandon, we were always in person. You know, it's not like a sophisticated facility like that can just be mothballed and shut down. We had important work to do. The university administrators realized the importance of what we do. And so I don't know if there were any other facilities really on campus that were continuously open and continuously busy. We had a few staff rotating, going, you know, doing some work from home, but, you know, we have to maintain that as a safe and secure facility. We were doing a lot of research. We were very, very nimble in that, obviously, you know, we'd never done COVID research before, and the upper administration and some of our incredible researchers said, this is a responsibility that we have to do this. So much was not known about the virus. And we were able to make contributions to the knowledge of that. And, you know, knowledge is power, right, Brandon?
Yeah.
So, yeah, sincere thanks. I've got like 38 staff who keep that environment running safe and secure. And they were working tirelessly on site all the time.
Well, I know people can drive by the BRI, and you're right there next to the NBAF facility, not too far, and the K-State Vet Med is not too far. But they are different facilities. Maybe you could kind of explain the difference between what BRI does and maybe what NBAF will do eventually when they get up and running.
Yeah, sure. So it's a monster building on the hill, obviously, NBAF, as we've been told. Well, as it actually is, you know, the sun comes up about an hour later for us now that NBAF is up on that hill. NBAF has about 7 pathogens that it's going to work with eventually. And we're a smaller facility, but with a much bigger portfolio in actual fact. So we're, as you know, a unique facility because we work on foodborne pathogens, plant pathogens, animal pathogens, including those zoonotic diseases that we're all worried about because those infect people. So in just the last 2 years, we've worked with about 20 different pathogens. So, you know, we're not the little brother of NBAF in any respect. We have that broader research portfolio, more pathogens, and a tremendous amount of training and education. You know, we have students and we have graduate students based at the BRI continuously. We've got about 25 researchers who work routinely at the BRI, and they all have research teams. So we've got about 150 people that are approved, go through all those security clearances and everything that we have to do in the fingerprinting, actually working at the BRI on a regular basis.
Okay. I think it's good to clarify that because there's probably some people in the public that just see the facilities and they just think they all work together and they're all separate facilities. So it's good to make that difference.
Well, we're certainly working very actively with NBAF. We worked with Homeland Security during construction and when we thought Homeland Security was on it. And now we have a tremendous relationship with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to provide them with some training and collaborative projects. We've worked with the USDA for many years as a group here called the Arthropod-Borne Animal Disease Research Unit, ABADRU. And their folks have been coming and doing research at the BRI ever since they moved here in 2010, I think it was.
Wow. All right. Well, I know last year we had the research come out about the SARS-CoV-2 with mosquitoes and how they can't transfer it, I think it was what we came out. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. We were relieved to get those negative data that showed that mosquitoes couldn't be infected. I think it's in the top 100 publications from Nature Scientific Reports at the moment, which translated into 18 languages. Yeah, great success.
Well, I'm curious, is there any other research that we may hear about soon here in the next few months?
Oh, continuously. Yeah, we're busier than we've ever been before, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've got a cheat sheet here, Brandon, you know that. As of the end of this year and our year end for animal-based research is in November when we shut down that area for routine and very carefully coordinated maintenance. We'll have done 21 different studies in that area alone. Of those 21 studies, 11 will have been on SARS-CoV-2. And as I said to you, that was something that we, you know, 2 years ago was not in our portfolio at all. And the work on that SARS-CoV-2 has been involved hamsters, sheep, cats, pigs, even white-tailed deer, doing some fundamental basic biology type studies, but also looking at the potential for different animal species to be infected, for them to shed the virus, and as a potential for possibly maintaining that virus in transmission cycles. Had some very interesting cat research. This is done by Dr. Ritt's team, showing that cats can be infected, basically asymptomatic. They can shed the virus, so there is that potential for transmission, although we haven't heard of anybody being infected directly from cats, but they do shed the virus. But his most recent study showed that once they're infected, they cannot be reinfected, which is reassuring. And then showing that white-tailed deer are susceptible to infection is interesting. And there's actually been reports from other groups outside of Kansas that wild white-tailed deer have actually been infected. How that works, I'm not quite sure.
Interesting. Well, it looks like we have a caller here. We may have a question I push this button because normally when I'm on Zoom, I have to push this button to make sure we can hear the caller, but I forgot we're in studio, so I don't have to push the button.
In person.
We'll have our producer do that, and go ahead, caller. You're on In Focus.
Hello.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wanting to thank you for last year when the C-19 first came up, of what you would consider and helping and the things that you did and explaining to us about how the disease and the masks and the social distancing and all the things that I've listened to you explain to us over the year. Thank you so much for your effort.
Well, thank you so much. That's much appreciated. I'm very proud to work at K-State and be able to disseminate some of the information that we gather. Thank you for that.
Yeah, Robert's one of our avid listeners here to K-Man, and I know he appreciates a lot of the guests here we have on here, including Dr. Higgs. It's interesting you mentioned the different animals that can contract the virus, shed the virus. I imagine a lot of them share similar traits with humans, and maybe that is kind of how you can try to figure things out here as to why it keeps spreading the way it does.
That's right. One of the common things between us and some of these animal species are a particular type of receptor that the virus binds to. If you don't have that receptor, you know, you can't really be infected, but these animals share this common receptor. But, you know, the studies that are being done at the moment are looking at diagnostics and vaccines, you know, the potential for vaccines for animals, maybe. All of current interest as we learn more about this virus.
You know, we obviously know how many cases there have been in the world, and the numbers seems to be growing and growing. We haven't heard a whole lot on case numbers with animals. Is that kept somewhere? Is there a database for information like that?
I mean, I read various publications in peer-reviewed magazines on that. I have not seen a specific database, you know, like on the CDC site. It may be there. I have not seen it, I must be honest.
Okay.
One of the other things that we've been doing and wrapping up is, as you may know, workers in meat processing plants seem to be a particularly susceptible group. There were, like, I think 330,000 people in those plants infected. And Dr. Randy Phoebus from Animal Science and Industry and Sally Davis from College of Vet Med have been doing a study looking at stability and spread of the virus in a mock meat processing plant within the BRI, believe it or not. It was a very fancy setup where they were basically looking to see how long that virus could last on surfaces, how far it could spread. Those data aren't out yet. They're doing all the analysis now, but that's very important work.
That information could potentially help some of those plants, I would imagine, be able to navigate through if there's ever spikes in cases. Because, you know, unfortunately, you know, we keep hearing, well, vaccines are the only way out of this. But in the meantime, being able to manage through clusters, I think, is what a lot of businesses really kind of need.
That's right. Yeah, vaccines and masks are certainly a critical part of controlling the spread of the pathogen. But, you know, the practices like social distancing, and you can imagine in one of those meat processing plants as you know, a production line where people are up close and personal, and now we know the potential risks of that in terms of spread.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got Dr. Stephen Higgs joining us here. He's the director of the BRI here at Kansas State University. We'll take a break, come back more. We'll talk about West Nile. That's always fun. That's coming up here in the next segment here on In Focus.